Welcome to Stoma and Continence Conversations from Coloplast Professional. I'm Paul.
And I'm Karen. We know stoma and bowel and bladder issues impact the lives of those that you care for.
We're here to support your educational needs and help you in supporting your patients.
We're talking to fellow healthcare professionals and experts by experience to discuss the latest hot topics in the worlds of stoma, continence care and specialist practice.
It's been said that time and tide wait for no one and everything changes over time. And the exact same thing can be said for the ostomates which we care for. From changes in the size and shape of a stoma and ever-changing body profiles to reduced eyesight and reduced dexterity for these individuals. As time goes on, everything is going to change. So once again today, I am joined by Maddie White, former chair of the ASCN and clinical lead at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital in Birmingham, to discuss how the needs of an ostomate can change over time and potentially some of the things that we need to do to support them whilst they're out in the community. So welcome, Maddie.
Hi, good to be with you again.
As I said, what I'd like to do today is talk to you a little bit about how things can change, because obviously nothing can ever stay the same. And we all get older. Things always change. I think we all, you know, we've all been there when we look in the mirror and say, who's that person looking back at me? It's not the 18-year-old I remember from back in the day.
I don't remember, Paul.
Exactly. So what I'd like to do is just put the first question to you, really. So what do you think are some of the most common changes and the subsequent challenges that an ostomate can face with this kind of change over time and how things change?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can look at this from both a physical and a mental perspective, really. And patients who come in and have surgery with us who are physically very unwell to begin with. So, for example, the patient with ulcerative colitis, who can be really sick, really cachectic and really not at their normal baseline, their journey is going to be very different from someone who perhaps is not as physically incapacitated as they are. So I think there are a couple of groups of patients, those young patients with colitis who have been very poorly and who will face their surgery, often with a lot of anxiety. But actually, in reality, when they've had their surgery, they immediately begin to feel better. And that can be quite a positive thing, really, because I think it helps them to get over that physical trauma of having surgery. But actually, when they are getting better, they will face lots of different challenges in terms of their weight, their size, their shape, their body proforma, and that will have an impact upon their stoma care as well. So that change from being an underweight, poorly, not very active individual to somebody who is fulfilling their potential as an individual will also bring with it those other changes. They may need to change their appliance, change the type of appliance that they use as their body shape changes. And actually, they will rediscover what life is all about. And you would hope that they would move on with their life in terms of the things that they do, the things that they face. And that can be anything from their job. Maybe they didn't have a job before, but actually now they may end up getting employment and they need to think about how life with a stoma is going to be when they're at work. And that can be something that can be quite challenging for patients. I mean, it really depends on what their job is. But they might worry, for instance, that, you know, doing something very physical can have an impact upon their stoma care. So for us, it's about supporting them through that. I think one of the other things that those youngsters face is getting over surgery and getting better, changing their relationships maybe, and going from being somebody who's very poorly and not able to get out and about to actually needing to socialise again. And that can be a huge challenge for patients because of their changing body image, their confidence. They might not have been out for very long, you know, before because of being so poorly. But actually getting better and discovering what life's all about again can be enormously challenging for them.
I think it's really interesting there that you kind of automatically split it into both the physical and the emotional. And I can remember when, you know, a lot of the times when I'm talking both preoperatively and immediately postoperatively with my patients, And I know, as you know, as a nurse, you know, a lot of the time you have that thing of, you know, when people say, how long's recovery? And obviously, you know, it's how long's a piece of string, generally speaking. But the amount of times people have been told, you know, my surgeon said it's 3 months recovery. And I always say, well, that's 3 months physical recovery for somebody who's relatively healthy preoperatively. But I said, what one of the things that lots of people often don't talk about is the emotional and psychological recovery from stoma surgery. And I always say that can be 12 months with a big plus, because a lot of the times I talk about, you know, the emotions almost being like a wave. And some waves, depending on your pre-journey to stoma formation, it's that thing of you might have had a cancer diagnosis and you are almost elated, for want of better words, that the cancer's gone. So a stoma is nothing, because you're just so pleased that you don't have the cancer anymore. The surgeon's taken the cancer away. Or you could see it as another hit, emotional hit, and another emotional psychological hit. So it's almost like a wave, where some people can get on that peak of that wave and just keep going, because they're almost on this period of almost elation that, you know, their problem's gone. You know, they did have ulcerative colitis, but, and, you know, they were evacuating their bowels 20, 30 times a day. But now they're happy that, you know, it's like, I'm not doing that anymore. I can actually carry on with my life. But then sometimes people's waves can come crashing down, and it can be the day after surgery. It can be 366 days after surgery. No two individuals are ever the same. And I think it's, as stoma care nurses, we really need to focus in on that emotional recovery and the long-term potential, well, short and or long-term emotional changes that stoma formation can actually have on an individual.
It can be very challenging at times, and challenging for people. Some of it is centered around their personality. I have this theory that patients' personality will affect how they recover from their surgery. Some patients will, you know, they will have experienced traumas of some sort or another in their life before, and they will pull on those coping strategies and those previous experiences to help them through emotionally. Whereas others will, you know, they will never have had something as big as having to go through the trauma of surgery and have a stoma. And it's like a bolt out of the blue, and they find it extremely difficult to cope with emotionally. So for us as stoma care nurses, we are often faced with the unknown. I mean, particularly if patients have had surgery as an emergency, you don't know these patients. You've had no time to build up a rapport. You don't know what their reaction is going to be. So I think for us, it's about having the skills to be able to pick up those cues and those little nuances that say to you, is this patient coping with this? Are there any clues that I can pick up on that are going to make me think, no, that's a worry? You know, how are we going to help the patient to cope longer term than just, you know, getting over this surgery? So I think some of that comes with experience, but it's also about looking at body language and picking up those little cues and the things that they say, and being able to evaluate their perception of what their illness has been like, what their recovery is going to be like. And for some patients, they might think that having a cancer, for instance, I've had this surgery, but actually I've got a stoma now, and that's a trade-off. I'd rather have that than have my cancer. And from that point of view, you know, they find that it's actually a positive, and they will just strive to carry on with their life and get over their treatment. But for others, it can be a real burden to have a stoma, because it can be unexpected. I often hear patients say, oh, I never, ever thought I'd want one of these. You know, a stoma and a bag was always the worst thing I could think of to have done. Whereas actually in reality, when they've got it, they realise that it's not the be-all and end-all, and it's not the end of their life. And with support from us and from their family and other relationships that they have, then they can get through this.
I think that's it. And you've really hit a nail on the head, and it's kind of one of the next kind of thing I'd like to ask, if that's okay. And it is just on that thing of the support, and when it comes to supporting the individuals that we care for. So, you know, in your, you know, experienced expert opinion, what do you think is one of the most important things we could do as stoma care nurse specialists to support our patients during these periods of change, you know, these kind of really active periods of change?
I think for me, one of the things that I would say is that if you have built up a good rapport with your patient whilst they've been in hospital and you've got to know them and they've got to know you, that really builds a foundation for that therapeutic relationship that is an ongoing relationship with your patients. As stomach care nurses, we never discharge our patients, and I think there's a reason for that. You know, we are always there for them, and life will change. They will have their ups and downs. So I think if you can build up a good rapport and a solid foundation for a relationship with them and build up your communication skills to help them, then you've set that relationship up for the rest of their life, really. So I think having good communication skills, learning how to listen to patients, how to interpret those cues, and have an open mind is really important. Allowing the patient the space and the time to be able to express themselves emotionally. Because often I think, you know, we are busy, we're in the hospital, it's a rush, you've got lots of patients to see, and that might not be the optimum condition for the patient to be able to feel that they can tell you how they really feel. So that's really important, giving them space and time. And that may come more with seeing them and supporting them at home. I know not everybody's able to do home visits, but actually that's a really important environment in which to see the patients, because you're on their territory. They're not on your territory anymore. And actually seeing them in their own home is very enlightening, because you see how their relationships are, what home life is like, and you'll find that perhaps they're a little bit more confident at home than they were in the hospital. So you get a very different view and a very different picture of the patient and who they are, you know, what they're about. We get to know our patients as individuals, and when they're in the hospital in pyjamas or a nightdress, then they're our patient. But actually in their own home, they are themselves. They're that person. And it's about making sure that you can support them within their life and their home environment in order to be able to get them back on their feet and back to normality.
I really like that idea of, you know, as stoma nurses, we see almost two completely different individuals. As you said, you know, we see the patient, but then we also see the person behind those pajamas as well. And again, you know, we do build up these very, very long-term therapeutic relationships where we know our patients like the back of our hand. Sometimes, and I'm sure you've been there as well, and I know I have, you see somebody in clinic and you can just tell by their demeanor when they walk into your clinic room, and you go in, right, we're not going to talk about your stoma for the first of all, what's going on? You are not you. What is happening? What's going on in your head? Because you're not you. Tell me about it. And I've had clinics where somebody's come in for, you know, for an annual review, and I've had to book them in again because I've been that one that they've, that healthcare professional, that I'm their constant contact. And some of our more elderly patients, we are their contact that they do have. And it's that thing of, we are, you know, I almost pride myself on saying with stoma care nurses, because we do follow our patients for that length of time, we give 100%, and there's no disrespect to any other kind of nurse specialist at all, but we give that complete holistic care to these individuals. We look at, you know, from diet, sexuality, to religion, to work, to hobbies, to social, you know, we literally have to have that involvement in every single part of their life. And sometimes it's that training and that support for those individuals. And that kind of brings me on to another question that I'd kind of like, I'd like to talk to you about. And again, you've kind of touched upon it there about, you know, when that individual's moving from the hospital environment to the home environment and this getting on with life. It's almost a little bit about this patient education, because I know when people, I always used to describe stoma care, you know, when you're teaching somebody stoma care in the hospital, it's a little bit like learning to drive. You know, when you're teaching stoma care in the hospital acute setting, you're not teaching people how to live with a stoma. Just like when you're learning to drive, you're not teaching people how to drive. People are being taught how to pass their test. So when people are having stoma care within the acute setting, they're almost being taught how to get home, how to manage to get home. They will only ever learn how to live with their stoma when they get home. And I think that comes down to the kind of, again, the kind of ethos of my next one is, when it comes to patient education, how much potential problems do you talk to your patients about what could happen in the future? Do you do things like, you know, do you talk about leakage? Do you, you know, all those sorts of things, you know, because again, I have lots of patients where they say, my bag's been fine for 10 years. Why is it leaking now? I haven't changed at all. And you have to say, well, actually, you have, because when you were put on that bag, it was 10 years ago. Where do you kind of sit with how far ahead do you actually look at when you're educating your patients about potential change?
From a personal point of view, I don't tend to go too far ahead with patients, because I think you're right. I mean, it's a really interesting analogy, this one of driving, and I've used it a lot in the past. And in fact, I've got my consultants using it now, that they will say to the patients, you know, we learn to drive, but we learn to drive to pass our test. And actually, I can remember being a new driver and going out there for the first time and having no confidence whatsoever and being totally scared out on the road. You know, you overcome that gradually and, you know, you will get there. And it is very much the same for our patients. They're very uncertain about, you know, what's right, what's wrong, what they can do in terms of, you know, looking after their skin, changing their bag. And some patients will follow your advice to the letter and they will absolutely do, you know, exactly what you've said. Whereas, you know, they don't necessarily need to behave like that all of the time. But I don't tend to go too far down the line. I tend to talk about the next 3 months, how things are going to be for you in the next 3 months. Yes, you've had major surgery and you need time to get over that. But actually, you need time to become confident with your stoma care, to become confident with who you are now as this new individual with a new, perhaps, outlook on life, but a new self-perception of their bodily image. And I don't think it's, you can talk to them about, you know, all of the things that may happen in the future. But I think that actually getting out of hospital, length of time in hospital has become shorter and shorter. And I don't think it's good to overwhelm patients with too much information all at once. They're already coping with a diagnosis, whatever that may be. And that can be a very negative diagnosis, such as a cancer. And they've got lots of information to take on board about that and about what treatment's going to entail. So to then burden them with what to expect in the future in terms of their stoma care can be really overwhelming for them. We give them a lot of written information, but that's to support what we've actually stated. For me, I tend to stick very much to what's going to happen in the next few weeks to 3 months. So I would talk to them about diet. In terms of the sort of diet that they need to be on to get over having their surgery. And I would talk to them about developing their confidence with changing a bag.
Yeah, I think that's a really good thing there. And I was going to ask as well, do you think that, you know, again, we talk about the length of time that an individual is actually in hospital for. Do you think that the enhanced recovery program has actually changed how you actually think about the education that you give to individuals?
In a way, yes. We don't tend to give any less information, but we tend to be giving it quicker, if that makes sense. You know, you very much spend longer with your patient than you perhaps did because you haven't got the beauty of being able to go back the next day, it may be. So you may spend longer with a patient and give them more of that information and then reiterate it the next day in a similar sort of session. Whereas in, you know, certainly when I first started, you know, you would very much drip feed patients. But I think you have to go on what the patient is able to cope with at the time. Some patients will just cope with, you know, information overload almost.
It is a really interesting aspect when you are talking about enhanced recovery and how things have changed. And whether that alters the patient's perception of being an inpatient and being that, you know, when we talk about those two people, you know, the patient and then the individual, you know, the well person, it's that thing of, has the enhanced recovery process changed people's perceptions? Has people's perceptions of care needs changed? I have noticed that there does seem to be a lot more when we talk about health seeking behavior. Have you found over time that there has been an increase when we think of things like Dr. Google and, you know, searching and that sort of thing? Do you feel that people's health-seeking behaviours changed over time and of recent years?
I do. I think patients can come to a clinic situation, or you can meet them in a hospital. They're very much armed with information, and it's about sorting out that information for me, because if they've sought the wrong sort of information or gone on the wrong sort of websites and picked up missed messages or incorrect factual information, then that's really important, because if they are already misinformed, then you've got some work to do to get them back onto the right path. Whereas patients probably 30 years ago when I started in Stomacare, you know, patients were very accepting of what we told them. We didn't have Google. There certainly wasn't the World Wide Web around that we could just hop on the internet and think, right, I need to look for such and such. That didn't happen. It was not available. So, yeah, patients very much are about wanting information, about wanting to understand their condition. That's really important. Not so much the elderly, it's more to, you know, the younger age group, but I think it's just about making sure that, you know, whatever they're looking at, you want them to be looking at something that's really comprehensive but is actually legit as well.
I know that we've worked with yourself and the ASCN in conjunction, and we've got the Safe Digital Resources, which I know is available on both the ASCN website and also available on the Coloplast Professional website, and there'll be links for both of those in the description. So I think it's that change in that health-seeking behaviour and their ability, and patients or individuals, they, as you said, they come pre-armed a lot of time to clinics. That kind of leads me now again onto another kind of question, which is, you know, as you know, the recent consensus paper, 2000 international nurses came up with the recommendations for best practice for patient follow-up, post-discharge or post-product alteration. And as I say, there were recommendations for best practice. But do you think that there is a need for a nationally recognized, standardized long-term follow-up of monitoring of individuals with a stoma? Because I speak to lots and lots of different nurses, and every hospital seems to have its own ideas of what good follow-up should look like. And I know you can't, a lot of the times you can't have one fits all, but you know, the underlying recommendations for long-term follow-up and monitoring. So do you think there's like there is a need for nationally recognized standardization?
Something like that would be very helpful in the first 12 months, probably, of a patient's journey, adaptation of life with a stoma. I guess if you look at the cancer pathway, the forward thinking is around that stratified follow-up pathway where we put patients in charge of their own follow-up and their own destiny almost. And I think that could be relevant to lots of groups of patients that we look after. So patients with colitis, pouch patients and all of that. And in some areas, you will see that happening where patients are very much in charge of booking their own appointments for follow-up, seeking health advice when they need it, and seeking ways of supporting themselves through different crises that they may face in terms of their health and their mental well-being. I don't think the NHS is in a position to be able to say, well, actually, we would love to be able to do this, that and that for all of our patients, because the demands on the NHS have changed so much over the last 10 years. And in particular, the last two with COVID has had, you know, a massive impact. But not all our services are the same. Not all of the resources that we have got have come from the same direction either. There will be people in post who just don't have the resources and the manpower to be able to do home visits. And certainly that's something I used to do. And now I've not done those for a long time. And that's, to me, that's detrimental, but I'm not in a position to be able to state, well, actually, I would like to be able to do that for my patients, because I work within an environment and for an organisation that will say to me, but actually the demands on your time should be here, there or wherever. So it's about getting that balance right, isn't it? And making sure that patients, they understand the pathway of care they need to be following, but actually can they access some of that themselves without us needing to do that for them? And that very much puts the patient in control as well. It's about making sure that they are informed enough to be able to actually find where that information comes from, seek that help for themselves, utilise things like support groups and information channels so that they can actually get that information and support, knowing that there's a soma care nurse within the acute or the community setting that they can fall back on if they need to.
As you said, no two hospitals are the same. No two individuals are the same post-op. No two individuals are the same pre-op. Everybody's journey is different to their life with a stoma. Everybody's adaptation to life with the stoma is going to be different. And I think that that is one of the key things that we need to remember, that it's the patients are at the center of everything that we do. Our demographics, and a lot of the time, dictate what we do. And again, depending on location, depending on trust, there's so many different aspects to what we can actually offer to our individuals, as long as the patients that we care for know that there are stoma nurses out there. That, as you said at the, you know, towards the very, very start, we never discharge our patients. Our patients are always there. So it doesn't matter what changes happen, whether it is, you know, changes in eyesight, whether it is reduced dexterity, reaching out to your stoma nurse and saying, I am having problems. It doesn't mean that you're failing as a patient. It doesn't mean that you are failing as a nurse by any stretch of the imagination. Things change. So I think it's that providing that emotional, psychological support and saying, we're here. Otherwise, you're not, just because you've got a stoma doesn't make you an ill person. Most of the time, you've got a stoma now and you're a well person because you have a stoma. Your stoma made you the well person that you are. It doesn't make you ill. So,
and that positiveness that comes from initially, post-operatively, from you as a stoma care nurse, about supporting that patient with a positive outlook on life, I think is really important. Because if you can't support them in terms of almost not promising them, but actually enabling them to realise that there is a future, there is a life with a stoma. Yes, it won't be the same as before, perhaps, but it could be, and it could be better. And actually, that's really important too, because if patients can't see that and that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, then their motivation, their self-esteem, their confidence, all of those things will go down. And that does not help you in your job to be able to support them through. And communication is just absolutely vital. We are almost the linchpin between the patient, their consultant, the community, their GP, the district nurse. And we liaise with all of these people. But because we've got experience, we can liaise with all of these people. We have the communication skills to be able to do that, but also to be able to channel that communication about care and care pathways in the right direction. And I think the patients really appreciate that. I mean, our patients tend to come to us with anything. We just say, you know, sometimes, you know, we want to pick the phone and we go, you know, NHS 111, what can I do for you? Because they will bring anything and everything to you, but they trust us. They trust us to do that, which just shows the regard that they hold us in. But I think that comes with experience and doing the job thoroughly and doing it to the best of your ability and making it about them, as you say. It has to be about them and their families. And if you can't support them along whatever curveball is thrown at them, and I was talking to a patient this morning who we talked about curveballs coming this way, here, from here, there and everywhere, and things will throw them, but if they know that you're on their side, they know that they can contact you and that they can pick up the phone and you will go, yes, hello, how are you? And you remember them. That just makes such a difference. It really does. And I think we're in a very privileged position to be able to do that. I don't know of many other specialties where nurses know their patients so well. I really don't.
I've said exactly the same thing, and I say it to a lot of people because, again, you've probably been told this more times than you can remember, is how could you do this all day? And my response is, I am the luckiest person alive. This is, in my opinion, and you have to be a certain kind of person to be a stoma nurse, I think. And I feel that I am incredibly privileged and lucky to have the job that I am because of what we do. And we get to follow these individuals sometimes for decades, you know, we get to be with them with the highs, the lows, and it's that continual therapeutic relationship. And it goes to show the sometimes unrecognized skill and impact of the stoma care nurse specialist, and how sometimes we do actually need to be able to put ourselves on a pedestal and say, do you know what? No, we are worth every single penny.
And I think sometimes it's hard to not be disheartened by things that happen around you. You know, we can't control our environments. We can't control the politics. We can't control how NHS, you know, the NHS is run. We can't do anything about some of those things. But actually, they can impact massively on us and the service that we provide. But what we can do is continue to support our patients, always to the best of our ability. And for me, that is the ultimate goal. If I go home satisfied that I did everything I could for those patients, then I know I've done a good day's work.
Perfect. And that's exactly how I feel almost every single day that I go home. So, Maddie, it's been an absolute pleasure again. Thank you so much for joining me. And I think especially that last bit, I think we needed a bit of positivity. Once again, thank you. And I hope that you'll join us again on another Coloplast Professional podcast.
Absolutely. Good to talk to you again, Paul.
That's brilliant. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Stoma and Continence Conversations is brought to you by Coloplast Professional. To learn more, visit coloplastprofessional.co.uk.